Welcome to the Super Together podcast. I'm James Cochran.
And I'm Ginger Rothis.
And this is part two of our in-depth analysis on Love is Blind.
In-depth.
In-depth feels...
Loosely.
Well, you know, when you're talking, it's like... Sorry, I just hit the boom and that was a disruptive vibration. It wasn't a good vibration. It was a disruptive vibration. If we were going to make a culinary analogy to what Love is Blind is like a Twinkie in that it is satisfying but has not a whole lot of nutritional value.
That's right.
So what we're doing is doing a New York Times food column on the Twinkie.
Yes, exactly. So we're trying to give it depth.
Yes. Part one, we spent some time talking about this show, Love is Blind. It's a Netflix series. You can go watch all episodes now. We're going to be getting into spoilers, talking a little bit about how things end up for people, who ends up together, who doesn't end up together. So if that's something that's really important to you, feel free to go watch the show and then come back. Otherwise, listen on and we'll get into it. So the central conceit of the show is that these people who have never had interactions with each other are forced into these pods where they can't see each other and have very open and intimate conversations, form connections that they are then asked to translate into marriage proposals. And five couples at least do. And then they are whisked off to Cancun with the other couples, start to, hit some roadblocks about what's the nature of this experience. At least one couple breaks up because of some withheld secrets. And this week we're going to be talking about the second half of the season and really exploring, like, as these lives merge together, these relationships that are built on not a lot of time. We won't judge how much intimacy they're founded upon, but at a minimum, it's a very quick turnaround. And now they're starting to merge their lives together and sort of dealing with all the challenges that come with that. So anything I didn't say about the recap, about our experience of part one or anything like that?
And is it a 30-day time clock from start to finish? I feel like there's a countdown.
Maybe a little more. Yeah, there's a countdown. And I feel like when it starts, it's maybe more like 35, 40 days.
Okay. Yeah. So you feel, I love that the producers put the countdown on because you can feel the pressure mounting, like 19 days away from the wedding.
Right.
And so what's interesting is how quickly conflict arises, right? And so I think that, so they go to this Cancun vacation time. Then after that, and I think we addressed that in our last podcast, that now you've got some more context, some more triangulation. You've got everybody coming back together that had dated previously. And then they start going home.
Yeah.
And to their own homes, to their parents' homes. And so now you have this new kind of taking in of what this person's life is like and if I could be a part of that. Some home apartments are small and some houses are nice and so you start to watch them walk through and assess knowing more about the person based on their context. So to your point on our last podcast of the pods removed all context, it's just words. And now you are seeing, I know I like this person. I know I'm deeply connected to this person, but do I see myself living in their life? Yeah. And you get families chiming in too.
Yeah.
But I think that the conflict arises so quickly that really struck me as relationships are hard. And we can live in this kind of incubator that Love is Blind created for them to foster a relationship. But when any dose of reality comes in, it tests the relationship.
Yeah.
And two people trying to come together and make this big looming decision within a few days of, am I going to marry this person, put on a lot of external pressure too. But the question is, am I in this for the long haul?
Yeah. It's interesting to me. And I'm going to mostly be faking my way through this because Ginger, well, I said,
I skipped the bachelor party
episode
and something else.
I didn't even know there was a bachelor party episode.
Yes.
Yeah. So we, you know.
But I did. I made it to the end with some fast forwarding.
Yeah, I watched the show on double speed, and I wasn't able to fully finish. But I think that part of what we're doing in exploring this is not just to say what did we think of the show Love Is Blind, but really what can we learn from the show Love Is Blind? Because I think that it's easy. You know, one of my opening ideas about the sort of second half of the season is Nick Lachey and his wife who are on the show. Yes. I can't remember what her name is. That seems unfair, but they pop up every now and then. And what were you mouthing?
I can't either. I'm trying to think of it too. Okay. We're both blanking. Sorry.
On her name. No, it's fine.
Yes.
So there's this moment right as they're about to leave Cancun, they're all having brunch together. And she says, you know, we've given you the best chance to succeed. And I'm thinking, they haven't done any counseling at all.
Right.
Now, that's biased as a counselor, but I'm thinking, you know, just giving people space to connect is great. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I teach this premarital class, and half of it is teaching and half of it is creating spaces for conversation that they can have with each other, the guided conversation with prompts and these types of things. But I think what it points to is, and that's always when we do our reviews, that's the most well-received space, is we're so glad we had this time to talk to each other about these important things that we otherwise wouldn't have had.
That's awesome.
And this show, I don't think did that. So I think that it is artificial to say that, yeah, you guys are going to have one of the strongest foundations that you can have for a relationship. I don't think that that's true. They didn't walk in with the maturity to have challenging conversations about what it's like to merge their lives together. And to me, again, speaking from my bias as a counselor that does this work for a living, I think that the show didn't offer them any way to do that. They didn't say, you, like most people, do not have the tools to navigate these conversations. Instead, they just said, you know, go bananas, you know, do your best, which for most people is really, really hard under the best circumstances and under, you know, extraordinary lengths of time knowing each other. But to say, hey, you've got a month to solve all the problems that everybody else solves maybe over the course of a year, over the course of, you know, multiple years. Mm. And we're not going to give you any guidance.
You know what would be fascinating is we should produce a spinoff on Love Is Blind and give them like the questions like financial resources and embedded beliefs and theology all of, you know, trauma.
Sexual history,
trauma you've experienced. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Instead of like, do you like dogs?
Right. And, do you like sports? You
know, right. Because ultimately they said, you know, like, yeah, we got into this really deep emotional content. And they did. People talked about faith. People talked about family.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not until, you know, they're, you know, I'm thinking about Amber and Barnett when they're like looking at his house and she's like, by the way, I've got a lot of student loan debt and I have like really bad credit and I don't have a degree and I don't really have career ambitions. Like, like those, and that's all news to him in that space, or at least the show portrays it as though it's news to him in that space. And that to me is that's premarital counseling is designed to navigate a lot of those questions. But I think more than anything, it's about, how do we have those conversations? I did see some very mature people on the show have conversations in a way that was, one of the things that I always coach my couples with is this question of, you know, is what I'm about to say going to draw me more close to you? Am I going to become more closely connected to you? Am I speaking from my own experience or am I making accusations about yours? Am I being accusatory or defensive, all that kind of stuff? So there are sort of these questions that we can use to evaluate our discussion. And I saw some of that, but again, I do this for a living and I'm really bad at it. I'm really bad at having conversations that are characterized by all of those guidelines. So I think it is a false premise to say that, yeah, these couples are jumping in with all kinds of information. So what do we start to see as now certainly, what are some of like the specific cracks? So obviously family is one of them. The kind of family dynamic.
So you saw some cracks with like economic means and either assumptions one way or the other way. And then meeting a family, you start to put together a picture of a family dynamic. There was an interracial couple that they dealt with a father's opinion of, you know, of an, he'd never dreamt of an interracial marriage for his daughter. And, but he compassionately, beautifully talked through that. And the producers produced that really well. But you do see this, you know, family is part of a marriage. You're marrying mm-hmm. into somebody's family. And so I always thought in the, I haven't watched The Bachelor for years, but I was really into it at first. And I always loved the hometown visit mm-hmm. part because you have to take in when you're talking to a person or thinking about them, you have to take in all of the things that influence them,
yeah.
right? What they grew up hearing, what they grew up seeing. Those all become our embedded beliefs. And so I think it, you know, there was a great family meeting between Kelly and Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was watching that family meeting, I thought, oh, this is the most stable couple on this whole show. And their families are great together. You could see the parents come together and hit it off. And so I thought, oh, this is a really redeeming story in the Love is Blind epic.
And how did Kelly and Kenny end up?
They don't end up together. she actually says no at mm-hmm. the wedding. And so... you know, so they had the producers had me hook, line, and sinker on that one because mm-hmm. I thought, okay, they've actually have the most stable relationship and their families are coming together. But Kelly admits in the end, she never felt a romantic connection that she was mm-hmm. longing for. And, you know, and she, I don't know if Kelly says this, but somebody makes the quote, I couldn't say yes for one moment and live a lifetime of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I thought, wow. Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's kind of what the show was pressuring them into is, you know, say yes for this moment. And she recognized a lifetime of uncertainty ahead.
Yeah.
And so I thought that showed her maturity. And, you know, but it was interesting to me because as I was watching, thinking family is really important. This is important that they all connect. They did. And Kelly never felt it. So
yeah.
So that's also to say family is important, but it's not everything.
Yeah, I think that there were examples, I think, of, you know, people having sort of misgivings like leading into it about, OK, mm-hmm. how is my father going to respond to the right. fact that we're an interracial couple? How is, you know, I'm really close with my brothers. Mm-hmm. What if, you know, am I going to have to pick sides mm-hmm. with if you right. and my brothers get into some kind of issue?
Mm-hmm.
I think that I want to go to this idea of certainty and uncertainty,
mm-hmm.
you know, and maybe I'll just ask you the question, Ginger, is monogamy a lie?
Oh my gosh. Wait, okay, what do you mean? Is monogamy a lie?
Well, like, I don't know. That's just the best way I could come up with a way to say it on the spot. Is, you know, what does certainty look
right.
like? Because I've been asked that question. Because my wife and I got married when we were 21.
Okay.
I felt pretty confident that I wanted to marry her when I was 15.
Wow.
And so I've had people ask me, like, what is it like to be certain?
Yes.
And it's hard because I don't. That uncertainty is something yes. that's unfamiliar to me. But one of the things that I can say is that I don't know that it is something that I look at as like a long term, like I'm making a prediction about the future.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
It's more saying like I have a lot of certainty now.
Okay.
And I imagine I'll have a lot of certainty tomorrow.
Okay.
And probably the next day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have increasingly less mm-hmm. confidence about what, I mean, I didn't know that I was going to have to spend 2 weeks mm-hmm. quarantined with
right.
my wife. Now the whole sickness and health thing, I guess, covers that in the oaths. So I guess I'm just asking the question,
mm-hmm. okay.
When we look for certainty in the
yes.
space of a relationship, mm-hmm. what is the experience, the thought pattern? What are we looking for?
Yeah. So this is so interesting because I would say Rob and I would probably both say uncertainty was how we felt because when we met, we were working together, but we'd been friends for about a year first, just as coworkers. And then we started to feel more connected with one another and getting to know each other better. But we lived in two different cities and worked in two other cities. And so we were traveling, and the odds were against us. And there was zero certainty. There was a huge mountain to climb if we were going to have a future together. And I remember at one point when we were dating and I was seeing a future with him, and I said, how is this all going to work? Like, this, we've got so many things to figure out. And he said, and we laugh at this today, he said, we'll figure it out. It's all too soon to tell right now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what guy tells a woman it's too soon to tell? Yeah. But that's how honest Rob was.
We'll make it up as
yeah.
we go. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but basically he was like, he had no certainty, but what he articulated in that same conversation was, I know I want to be with you. We'll figure this out somehow. And so the nuance of, I know I want to be with you is your question, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Of how do you know you want to be with this person? And I wish we could bottle that and mm-hmm. and offer it to people. That's where I come back to that knowing who you are, knowing what's important to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's most of my work with women is, who are you at your core? What's your identity? What do you want? What's your purpose? But we're in our 40s and 50s having that conversation, right? If we can figure that out in our 20s,
yeah.
then this idea of who I marry becomes much more clear.
Yeah.
I think what Kelly was getting at in that lifetime of uncertainty quote that resonated with me was, she knew in her subconscious mm-hmm. gut, whatever, there was a feeling that this isn't right.
Yeah.
And she trusted that. And so I think she was certain something was off. And I guess that's all we can be certain of is
sure.
What are my instincts telling me? And really honing that ability to listen to your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I work on this a lot with women, that we have quieted our intuition because we told ourselves that meant you were judging somebody, or you weren't being nice, or you shouldn't use your voice. And so we quiet our intuition thinking, oh, I might be wrong about this, so I'll just be quiet. And what we find later is our intuition was actually speaking to us so many times. Mm. And we kind of did know the answer all along,
yeah.
but we didn't listen to it. And so I think with certainty, to me, is what is that inner voice, that inner knowing saying to you? And that's worth listening to. And yours was certain for Lindsay.
Yeah.
And some people have that, and some, I think, continue to search for that.
Sure. You know, I think there's a book that I love by Peter Rollins.
Mm, I like it.
The Idolatry of God, Breaking Our Addiction to Certainty and Satisfaction.
Yes.
One of the broader ideas that I think this show and many other shows explores is, what do we do with our individual experiences of what a relationship should be and the cultural expectations mm-hmm. of what a relationship should be?
Right.
You know, we have a sense of, okay, well, if, I mean, you hear the couples, you know, when they're in Cancun talking about it, like, oh, how are people going to react when they realize that I'm engaged to somebody that I just met under these certain weird circumstances? And that feels like it has weight in mm-hmm. in our relationships. Now, but that weight ultimately we have to recognize is arbitrary and sort of self-imposed. Mm-hmm. We decide that those things matter or don't matter. The show Parks and Rec, if we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Andy and April, two incredibly endearing characters, get married after having been dating for like a month.
Mm-hmm.
And April, Leslie is anxious about this. She says, too fast, too soon. You're young. You got your whole lives idea. And April's response is like, Leslie says, well, what if in a month you decide you don't want to marry him? She's like, well, then I'll divorce him and then I'll marry him again. Like,
right.
What they're naming is that, like, oh, that I can have an attitude yeah. toward what do I need to be in a relationship mm-hmm. that's different than the sort of broad cultural expectations.
Right.
I think that the divorce rate, the, you know, even just the non-divorced but ultimately unhappy or unhealthy couples that exist mm-hmm. in our world, to me is indicative of an idea that we are not really that excellent prognosticators mm-hmm. of what is our life going to look like. But really it comes down to And I kind of like this idea of what you said. It's harder to know what we want than it is what we don't want. Mm-hmm. Like, we can know what we don't want with a lot mm-hmm. more clarity and yes. saying this, there's something about this that doesn't match, mm-hmm. that doesn't feel authentic with who I am and who I want to be. And so I think that's what these couples are being asked to explore mm-hmm. in these spaces, is how authentic does this feel mm-hmm. to really live into this relationship in my actual life? And so we find varying degrees of success for that. One of the things that I felt most interested in is seeing how how individual realities of their lives shaped the way that they experienced mm-hmm. their relationship. So yes. like Amber didn't tell Barnett about the credit card debt. Mm-hmm. But even if it's an abstraction versus, okay, now we're actually paying, mm-hmm. you know, that's coming out of our monthly expenses mm-hmm. of like, you know, paying credit card mm-hmm. debt. And the impact that those types of things have, you know, right. on a relationship. And so I think that there is a, you know, relationships can, when they shift from being something where it is exclusively about the connection that we have mm-hmm. with other people into we're very deeply connected and someone has to take out the trash right. and exactly. someone has to clean the toilet.
Yes.
You know, has to,
right.
make, you know, enough money, right. you know, those become practical realities where it's like, okay, we're sharing our lives together. Mm-hmm. And that means all the stuff that isn't, mm-hmm. you know, just being on a helicopter in Cancun.
Right. And I think that's what the show does kind of look at, is it starts exciting for mm-hmm. all of us. But when the excitement ends, who's it worth working for? Mm-hmm. Right. I think the author is Mark Manson. Maybe he has this, are we going to bleep expletives?
I can bleep it, yeah.
He has it when you're starting a business. When he teaches entrepreneurism, he's like, what is your idea that's worth eating a sandwich for, right?
Yeah.
So you're always going to have a sandwich, mm-hmm. right? You're going to have something that doesn't work the way you want it to, or something that goes awry. And so do you love this so mm-hmm. much that you will eat a sandwich? And so now I've said it three times.
There's going to be so many bleeps in this.
But that came to mind as I was watching Love is Blind, because it was like, what's worth working for, right? Mm-hmm. So who is worth taking the trash out for? Who is worth cleaning the toilet for? To have this partnership in my life, this is worth the day-to-day grind.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, I'd love the follow-up in a year with all of them and see how it worked. Did you watch the season finale, the recap, or the reunited? I didn't.
My wife did.
Okay,
that
so
doesn't
I
count.
I watched it quick late last night, knowing we were going to record today. But it, the gist of it is the two couples, Amber and Barnett, and I'm going to have to check my notes. Cameron and Lauren, they stayed together, mm-hmm. and then Gia, Nina, and Damien, mm-hmm. they split up, but they are dating again.
Okay.
So, and then the other people are there as single gotcha. People. But you know, it was interesting. So Amber's changed her hair color and like life goes on, right, for all of them
sure.
now. So I don't know when I think they shot it a year ago, maybe.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to hear the what's life like now? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what you're getting at, is when the excitement is over, who do I really want to do life with? And who, where do we merge the excitement, lust, initial attraction with the realities of day-to-day living?
Yeah. I think that to me is the key, because I think that it can be in the process of merging their lives, like mm-hmm. premarital couples and those types of things, it feels very much like the energy that they have that is focused on connection is like buckling under the weight of reality.
Yes.
And for me, that is usually just a lack of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yes. it's a way of mm-hmm. saying, well, okay, here's what our life has to look like now. So mm-hmm. this is what our life's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose the intentionality that is required to make those connections reality. Now, I give couples this analogy when I'm talking about sex and sexual frequency. When I was in college, they had grilled cheese like every day. You're laughing. Do you know where I'm going?
No, I just love this.
They had grilled.
I think I know where you're going.
They grilled cheese every single day.
Okay.
Now they had tomato soup.
Yes.
Like once a month.
Sometimes. Okay.
Sometimes. You see where I'm
it's
going.
It's a good combo. Mm-hmm.
This is a terrific combo, yes. right? But invariably, on the days when they serve the tomato soup, the once a month days, they like weren't happened to not be serving grilled cheese that day. It's tragedy, right? They have actual full restaurant chains focused on grilled cheese and tomato soup. And the fact that they kept missing this was not because they couldn't make it work, but because there was a million other things that they were focused on. And most of the time, all that it requires is just the smallest amount of intentionality to say, hey, when we're setting the soup schedule, let's make sure that we're intentional about putting tomato soup on a grilled cheese day.
I love this that you teach this. Okay.
Because I think that what your desire is going to fluctuate. Some people are going to have more desire. Some people are going to have less desire. Mm-hmm. But again, when we think about all the realities of like making a kitchen run,
right.
It's all the realities of making a life run.
Right.
I'm expanding this analogy here more than I ever even have.
I'm tracking with
you. There's really a lot to it.
Yes.
And those spaces of intimate connection of our life is full of meaning and rich with value. Those are far less likely to happen by accident, mm-hmm. In the real world than they are on a beach in Cancun.
Right.
And I think that that is part of the lesson that we take away from this, is that when we watch The Bachelor, when we watch Love is Blind, when we see like, oh man, wouldn't it be nice to like go on like an extended vacation, mm-hmm. with this person that you're deeply, mm-hmm. connected to. Yes, it would. And that's exactly what it is. It's a vacation. Mm-hmm. The real question is how do we find ways to say, I want this to be part of my life. Mm-hmm. So what does intentionality look like? Well, a lot of times it looks like making a calendar, making a schedule, saying this is when it's going to make sense for us, mm-hmm. to connect in this way. Mm-hmm. It's going to require, as you named, being honest about who we are and what, mm-hmm. we want, mm-hmm. And sort of what our needs are. And again, this extends far beyond sexual intimacy and into, mm-hmm. I want to, run a B&B in Vermont with you. Right. I want to, go hiking more often. I want to experience the world in ways A, B, and C. But again, those things do not happen by accident. And again, I think that showing these realities in such stark relief makes for good television, mm-hmm. because it says like, oh, these lovebirds, they think life is easy, but it turns out it's really hard. and yeah, it is really hard. But ultimately, what I would hope people would look at that is and say, like, oh, strip away everything else, that connection exists.
Yes.
But what happens is we pile on the reality, right. of life and forget to be intentional about all that connection.
That's right. I love that. Yeah, you're right. I find so much of my work is just reminding people of things, sure. right? So just like that, that's a reminder.
Yeah. I haven't had an original idea in 10
exactly.
years. Exactly.
Yeah. No, but that's like, we have to be reminded, mm-hmm. of the connection, because it's so easy to lose sight of that. And so your intentionality is so right. We just need to be reminded. And that's what we can do with our partner, is be the reminder sometimes of, and be the one that speaks up and says, wait, where did we go off track? Can, mm-hmm. we come back to this and reconnect? And I think that's such a, one, it takes knowing that you've gone off track, right? Instead of just letting anger perpetuate that and further the divide. What was our first connection? And let's be really intentional about fostering it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if we can, find a way as couples to just sort of to recognize that those opportunities are often there, but if we're not intentional, it's just two ships passing in the night.
That's right.
And so instead, we want to make sure that we say, well, how can we make sure that we're linking up, mm-hmm. By paying attention to it? Because again, the things that draw me most energetically toward my wife are the same. They exist in her today. They existed in her 10 years ago.
Right.
They will exist in her 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years
from
now. What will make the difference in the longevity, mm-hmm. of our relationship is whether I am being intentional about creating space for, mm-hmm. those things to show up in our everyday lives. Because again, we've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old in our house.
Right.
Life is a nightmare, mm-hmm. and it's going to be really hard for us to be able to see that in each other if we're not being intentional.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. Do we have any parting thoughts, ideas, sort of final reviews of Love is Blind? Again, we recognize that most people have watched, are watching, will watch this show, because you're going to be watching everything in Netflix's catalog,
yes.
here in the next several months. And so many of you may be starting with Love is Blind. I think it was one of the top 2 or 3 shows, mm-hmm. on Netflix, at least.
I have a question for you. Do you believe in soulmates?
No.
Okay.
I don't. Do you?
I don't know. Because that word got tossed around a few mm-hmm. times. So I was looking for the spirituality, of course, in Love is Blind.
Yeah, yeah.
and so, you know, people did talk about their soul. There were quotes like, I'm thanking God for you. God brought us together. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. But I thought, I wonder if James believes in soulmates.
No, I don't. And part of that is because I'm a recovering atheist is how I describe myself. Mm-hmm. So I'm super duper duper skeptical about most like lightweight theological stuff.
Yes.
Or stuff where it's like, you know, it's hard to make the broad metaphysical connection to those ideas. I am of the idea that love, relationships, they take a lot of work and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are most connected with each other are not people who, you know, have a, you know, oh, I dropped my umbrella and you helped me pick it up in the street and now we've fallen madly in love, or we met in a pod or whatever. They're the people that work at it. They're
yeah.
the people who say, we care a lot about the same things. We want to do life together in a way mm-hmm. that is intertwined. And I think that those relationships exist in part because of a, you know, logistical mm-hmm. reality. Aziz Ansari wrote the book Modern Romance,
mm-hmm.
And he talks about how, you know, like in the early 20th century, your soulmate was who lived in your apartment
right.
building or who,
exactly.
or who lived on your block or down the lane from you.
Right.
But now we live in a world where it's like, oh man, there's like, I could mm-hmm. be with anybody that I want to
yeah.
be based on the ease of travel and the ease mm-hmm. of connection. But ultimately puts us in a position to recognize like, okay, how lucky were all those people mm-hmm. in the early 20th century that their soulmates happened to live down the road
right,
from each other.
Right.
When in reality, what it was is like, hey, you found somebody mm-hmm. that checks off enough boxes for you mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, they care about the same things. Mm-hmm. They believe in most of the same things. And now we work at it.
Yes.
Or we don't. And then we find that connection mm-hmm. dissipates. I'd be happy to be wrong on that. That's not a hill I'm prepared
no,
to die on,
right.
but it's something where I feel that, it's similar when someone says something like, you know, thank God that person made it through the surgery successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
mm-hmm.
thinking like, no, thank mm-hmm. the people that put in the hard work
mm-hmm.
to make that surgery successful.
Right.
Now, thank God for creating
right.
science in a way that was mm-hmm. accessible, you know, all
exactly.
that type of stuff. Like I can thank God every day for Lindsay.
Right, right.
But the strength of our relationship, I think, is a function of the fact that she and I are very
working
intentional about
yeah.
doing that. And we do that in service to each other and in service to God.
Yeah.
Like we can, so there's soul in our relationship,
yes.
but I don't know that I would look at it as soulmates, but.
I love it. I agree. I really do. I think that there's, I guess when I think of soulmate, it's that deeper connection
mm-hmm.
that you like chemistry, beliefs
yeah,
in
yeah.
check. There's a deep connection that one feels with a certain other person.
Sure.
That's where I, you know, but soulmates defined in a lot of different ways. But like, is there a person you're destined to be with? I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that there are probably multiple people that you could have a deep connection with.
Sure.
And then it becomes the proximity and the,
yeah,
who
yeah.
did your paths cross?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in a world where meteorites fall from the sky,
mm-hmm.
you know, thank God that there's not just the one.
That's
right.
That's right.
And not that, in this world
right.
that we're living in, meteorites are our number one concern. I wish.
We're sort of in
yeah.
there. Yes.
So,
okay.
So everybody, you know, hang in there. We know it's a weird time and a weird season. And we are going to be doing our best to try to create space for you to lean into your relationships with one another in this weird time. If you've got specific requests, this was a
mm-hmm.
Lindsay Cochran request. That's my wife.
It was a good one. It was a fun assignment.
And if you've got things where you say like, you know, I'd love to hear about this or that or your thoughts on this particular thing that everybody's focusing on, we'd love to do that. We had this whole like plan for the rest of the year, and we're basically just saying we're going to give the people what they want.
That's right.
And right now we just want the people to tell us what that is.
Yeah, let us know.
So beyond that, I'm James Cochran. You can find my information at talkingwithjames.com.
And I'm Ginger Rothis, and I'm at compassionfix.com.
And that will do it for us today.
Be well.